Welcome to Planning Commission today. We are going to probably welcome and introduce our new commissioner, John Marsh, today. The city and the commission wants to give a thank you to all the many qualified applicants that applied for the Planning Commission position, and we are grateful to have Commissioner John Marsh joining us today, and excited to add your voice and specific experience and also the area that you represent. We are really excited to have somebody from the new annexation to be in working with us and representing that area. So if you want to tell us anything about yourself, we'd love to hear a little bit about your background or anything that you'd like to share.
Perfect. Thanks. John Marsh, grew up in Orem, lived in Texas, Brazil, and then I've been a resident of the recently annexed area in North Salt Lake for about 14 years. My spouse is a planning commission, or is a planner, now senior planner at the City of Holiday, and recently got a master's degree. So I was in the weeds there doing planning assistant work really enjoyed it. Own a few rental properties, have dabbled in a little bit of development myself, but haven't really done anything serious. Professionally, I'm a computer engineer at a defense contractor. And then, like I said, I run a few different rental properties that are focused on, most of them are focused on providing housing needs for folks with disabilities. So they're leased to a company that takes care of folks with adults with disabilities for the state. So that's where most of them go to. So looking forward to working with y'all and with staff, and thank you.
Appreciate Thanks. It for you. Thank you, Commissioner Marsh, and we are grateful to have you here, and we've seen your face many times over the years at our public hearings and comments and have appreciated your voice and commitment to showing up for the city and voicing for the people there. So thank you for being here, and we're glad to have you joining us. We will move to any public comments that are not an agenda item. Any public comments? D? No? Okay. We will move to agenda item 3, work session, pending code amendments. Sherry.
We thought you might get upset if we canceled another meeting. So we know we've canceled a few in a row, and it's not that we haven't been working. It's just that applications are kind of on hold while we wait for applicants to respond to redline comments and finish out the items that they need to have complete applications. So a couple things happened recently that I thought would warrant a little work session here as we move forward, and I just want to fill you in on some of those things. Some of you may be aware of some of the things going around for the Lifeline facility down there by Foxborough. A company that's a nonprofit company has put it under contract to provide homeless services there at that location. As we were hearing rumors about that, we met with the city attorney and started looking at our code and specifically our conditional use ordinance, and it's missing some really key things related to safety that we would want to be able to impose as conditions if we do receive an application for a conditional use permit. So in state code, there's a statute that says if you are, if you have a pending ordinance, you can postpone any applications for a use that would be affected by that pending ordinance for up to 180 days or until you have that ordinance adopted, whichever is first. So on what date did I say it was? I can't remember. August 15th, yeah, City Council. It is August 15th, you're right. August 15th, City Council had a special meeting where the council made a directive to staff to start a process to update the conditional use ordinance, including the land use tables, and then also sign the sign ordinance. So that's what we're going to be working on very diligently for the next 180 days. I don't know what's going to happen with the application. I know that the county pulled their funding for that. They didn't have it on their agenda today. They took a little bit of an hour and a half of public comment from our residents who told the commission how they felt about the idea. I know that they'll return back to the Homeless Services Board on September 12th to get an answer on the state funding for the purchase. So the idea was that Switch Point would purchase the property. They put it, you know, earnest money down and entered into a purchase contract. The state would put up $1.75 million. The county would put up about $1 million. And then there are some philanthropical organizations that are coming up with the other money. We don't know who they are or what the funding level is, but the county has pulled their funding and support for that location. So I don't know what will happen. I don't know if the state will vote to give them the money to buy it, if they'll give them more money, or if it will die. But in the meantime, we're going to start working on conditional use permits. The other reason that signs were included is because of our sign code is very much out of date, and we've had some issue with some political signs, and specifically at our vendor's fair, where there's an individual who comes and he sets up a booth and he puts his political signs in front of the other vendors and generally harasses them. I don't know why he thinks he's helping his case, but we don't have a good ordinance to deal with that. And so the city attorney is going to have a work session with the planning city council next week, so on September 3rd, and he's going to go over the changes that we need to make to that ordinance to give us some more tools to deal with political signs and generally signs in general that we need to make. So I'll be working with him to update that ordinance, but if you're interested in tuning into the work session with the council on the 3rd, it'll begin at 6 o'clock. It'll be streamed on YouTube, so you can watch it live or you can watch it later, and you can kind of see what he goes over. So I'm looking forward to learning more about what we need to do to change our code with respect to signs, specifically political signs. So with that, we figured, because we didn't have any applications ready, that this would be a good topic for us to discuss is conditional use permits. So under the state code, we are governed for conditional use permits under 10-9A-507. And what we are required to have in our ordinance is objective standards for our conditional uses. Any conditions that we impose have to mitigate the reasonably anticipated detrimental effects of the land use. Mitigation does not mean that it's elimination of the detrimental effect. It just means mitigated it to a reasonable level. So we'll have to ask some attorneys what that means. The conditions have to reasonably relate to the anticipated detrimental effects. So we can't say, oh, you are putting in conditional use, you want this conditional use, and it's going to make this noise that's going to impact the community, but if you pay us $10,000, that will mitigate it. It has to be reasonably related to it. Or if you set back from the property 5 feet instead of 3 feet, that's not something that's going to reasonably mitigate noise. So it has to be something that actually relates to the potential detrimental effect of the business. If you can't impose conditions, then you of course can deny the conditional use permit. It also makes it clear that conditional use permits are administrative, they're not legislative decisions, and all of the uses listed in our code either have to be permitted or conditional. So with that, this is where we're at, is looking at our conditional use permit ordinance. So we have given you a copy of our conditional use table. Some of you will remember that from the last year when we were working on it. I didn't include the highway commercial zone. It's written a little bit different. So we have this long list for these three zones. We have everything designated as a permitted or conditional or not permitted in the zone. In the CH zone, you remember, we take a different take on it. So we've generalized the categories in the CH zone. So we have general office and general retail and restaurants and auto sales. But we don't have, like we have in this table, if you'll see, you can look under like manufacturing, and I've got, 25 manufacturing uses, different manufacturing uses, food and transportation manufacturing and furniture manufacturing, every kind of wholesale trade you could ever think of. You would think. And when somebody comes in and requests a business license, we have to search through this table and see where it fits and try to figure out if it's something that's permitted or not permitted. And so what we want to do and propose to you is that there, well, first is to get some feedback. Do you want to see the more general uses, or do you like the specific uses table? Because there's pros and cons to both of them. So if somebody comes in and they want to do something manufacturing, and we just say it's light manufacturing, and that we define what light manufacturing is, they may come in and say, well, I want to do a dog food manufacturing, which is going to use recycled animal waste, so from cows and butchers, and then they're going to render that and the bones and turn it into dog food. Right now, I specifically have something that says that's prohibited, but under a heavy manufacturing use, that might be something that we would have to permit if we went more general. So it gets really tricky. But on the other hand, we get something that comes in very specific. Like, give me the example that you gave me in your office of the recent business.
The one I did yesterday?
Yeah.
Yesterday, I approved a business license for, I don't know if this is a great example.
The museum thing.
Yeah. So they're called Process Curiosity, going in on 500 over in the industrial park. And what they do is design and then build art exhibits and museum exhibits, but they're like interactive and for children, and so they look like playgrounds. And I couldn't figure out how to classify that one because it's not in my giant land use table. So I just threw it under miscellaneous, which is a staff determination. And typically with a staff determination, we bring it to you guys for conditional use permit. But the purpose of a conditional use permit is to mitigate potential negative impacts, which I did not anticipate for this, so I just permitted it. I don't know if...
No, that's a good example. So we get uses all the time that sometimes we're going, well, that doesn't sound like a problem. We don't think it's going to be a problem, but we can't figure out which category to put it into. Because it's not specific enough, and all of these uses are very specific. So with that being said, we would like to have a discussion about that, or at least get you thinking about that as we move forward. What we would like to do is give you this as homework for our next Planning Commission meeting and a highlighter. And we would ask that you would take some time and go through each one of these uses and highlight the ones that you think should definitely be prohibited, like animal slaughtering. Maybe you think that that's no way that should be permitted in the industrial zone, and so we want to prohibit that one. So any use that you see in here that you think, why would we ever want that weird use that's listed in this table, that we think that should be prohibited? We'd also like you to highlight ones that maybe you don't understand what it means, that so that we can address those and kind of try to figure out what if we need definitions for those things used. And then we'll kind of go from there and try to figure out whether we want to collapse some of these categories or whether we want to expand some of the categories. So for instance, when we were looking at these categories, we were thinking about wholesale trade or even retail businesses. Why do we have a category for retail businesses for grocery stores? And then we have one for shoe stores, and we have one for jewelry stores. Why do we care what kind of store it is? A store is a store. It shouldn't, it's not impactful. But we may not want to have, we may want to have expanded uses in the manufacturing zone because we want to say something about chemical manufacturing is not going to be a permitted use. It might be a prohibited use. Or manufacturing uses, what we can define and say we don't want ones that store chemicals over such and such quantity. So those are some of the things that we can do with these uses. Some of them we think can be generalized and collapsed. Some of them we think they probably shouldn't be collapsed.
But, can I interrupt you for one second? And I think you can touch on this better, but I think it's kind of a loose end. We're by no way going to be able to anticipate every single land use if we're expanding it out in like manufacturing and things like that. Like I just said, I had one come across my table and I don't have art exhibit or playground manufacturing in my land use table, right? So by code, the way it stands right now, if it's not listed, it's not permitted. And so if that were to happen, or that's how we would write it, if that were to happen and it wasn't listed and I couldn't shove it in some category, then we would just tell the person to come back with a code amendment and we'd potentially add it to the table with certain supplementary additional standards. So like, we probably don't want to completely prohibit tow yards, we might, or we require them to have a certain lot size and do certain things to be licensed. But I just wanted to add that little note about if it's not listed, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean that they can just come in and the supplementary.
I've never liked that. Is this the opportunity to maybe suggest the opposite, that if it's not listed, then it must be brought to the Planning Commission for a conditional use permit?
I don't think we wanted to say that it's, we want to say that it's either it's prohibited if it's not listed, and which at that point, then they can ask for a code amendment to add it back in, and you can decide, because we don't want to just say everything that's not listed is a conditional use, because what's a conditional use? It's an administrative decision that is a permitted use with conditions. So what if you permit something you really don't, you have to permit something that you really didn't want to permit because it wasn't listed.
I agree with you, but isn't that a hassle for the staff to have to process an amendment every single time?
It won't be very often, okay. I can tell you that.
But just also,
historically speaking,
just as a reminder, because I think most of you were on this planning commission when the state changed the statute regarding conditional uses. But the whole intent is that it's not something that comes before the planning commission and we go, well, in this situation, we need this number of parking stalls or that type of thing that is subjective to that property. It has to be objective to all the businesses that have the required thing. So we're trying to do away with conditional uses and either just say permitted or not permitted. And if it's permitted, it may have supplementary standards that go with it. Like right now, we
also conditional would have supplementary.
Yeah,
standards.
Right now we have adult daycare services, which is a permitted land use, but they have to meet the supplementary standards, which are in chapter one near our definitions. And that was approved by you guys a couple years ago. So that's the most recent one I can think of.
So keeping in mind, whatever uses we have left, if there are standards for those particular uses, we have to enumerate them in the code. So for auto dealerships, we have the section that refers to what parking requirements are for an auto dealership. We don't have anything else that says the minimum lot size for an auto dealership is 1 acre. The maximum number of vehicles that can be displayed per acre or whatever is this many. We just say you have to have display vehicles, and for every 10 display vehicles you have to have one customer parking. And we have people who come in with a tenth of an acre on Highway 89 and want to do a small car dealership, and they come in and say, well, we're only going to have 5 cars. So I only need 5 customer and employee parking spaces. That's what the ordinance says. And then the very next, I don't know, month or two later, they have 40 cars on the same property. And that is a real example.
And then they park on the street.
And then they park on the street.
That's what happened in that annexed area and
yes.
Caused a lot of issues. So yep. How did that get mitigated? I remember we had conversations about that, but like, was that
in progress? That was okay. Code enforcement in progress.
Literally.
Oh.
Yeah. So we have car dealerships that go, well, it might be the other car dealership that you're referring to, but we have car dealerships that during the day, they have so many cars on their lot, they take a certain number of cars off the lot, park them on the street during the day so that you can move around the lot, and then when they close, they move all the cars back onto the property. So clearly they have more cars than they have capacity, but I have no regulation that says you have to have X number of square feet per car or per display vehicle, right? So those are the kind of standards that we need to put in. So I wanted to provide you with a couple of examples from other codes just to kind of show you what they are doing to spur some ideas and thoughts, and then maybe we can have a conversation about that. But this is from Clearfield zone. So they have a list of general uses in their manufacturing zone, and then they have a list of conditional uses. They then have subcategories for each one of these where they define automobile repair, what can and can't be done in automobile repair.
What lens do you want us to evaluate this list with? Like, do we have like objective criteria, like nuisances? Do you want us to evaluate this on, do I think it provides too much smell or noise pollution?
Yes.
Or am I just looking at this going, no, I don't like that type of business?
I would look at it with the lens of, is that type of use going to create junk accumulation? Is it going to create noise or odor or light pollution or some other effect that's going to be detrimental to the community? So, or traffic. It could be traffic. It could be, so those are probably the main categories that you think of. Or environmental. It could be an environmental hazard. Like, we don't want to have chemical manufacturing in the MD zone, perhaps. Or we don't want to have printing, because printing businesses, not like small print shops, but like the ones that, paper mills, right? Paper mills create a lot of waste and hazardous waste at that. So, and they use a lot of hazardous chemicals in them. So we need to think of them with those lens as well. Is this use going to be something that will harm the environment? Is this going to be something that's going to generate traffic? Is this going to be something that uses a lot of water? There are a lot of manufacturing uses that use a lot of water that we wouldn't necessarily want to approve. Now, we're going to help you with some of those things because we're going to go through the same exercise internally. But we would like to get your gut reaction to some of these uses and also to some of them where you're like going, I don't even know what that means. Because there's some of them that we don't even know what they mean.
And we don't have a definition.
Them,
because like, it was removed at some point.
I don't know what that
so
even
means.
So
we avoid them.
Yeah. So that's our request of kind of think of it with that lens and look at them and go, well, it looks like all of these different kinds of store uses could be collapsed down into just retail stores. Or it could be the wholesale uses that could also be collapsed. I don't think we're not going to be able to collapse a lot of the manufacturing uses, but we might be able to categorize some of them into light manufacturing and some of them into heavy manufacturing, and then have different standards for those two categories. This is from South Jordan, and this is example of the supplementary regulations. So for each one of their, well, this is the part about how they process conditional use permits, but then they get into the next section and they have specific regulations for by use. And so they'll have one for animal services, for instance. It talks about it has to be enclosed within an enclosed facility. It can't be operated outside. They haven't gone really into a lot of detail on some of these, but some of them didn't need a lot of detail. So financial institution. So that one, number four that you see up there, that is, check cashing services. You might not want a lot of check cashing services because maybe we think that that's bad for our economy or for our residents to get stuck into check loans. Or pawn shops, because they may contribute to more crime, right? Because people come in and pawn stolen goods, and then that's more things that our police have to investigate. So those are some of the things that you might be thinking about as we look at the use tables. They have, some different categories for, okay, what happens with self-storage units, in the particular zones. Then they break it down by zones. In the CF zone, it can't be more than 6 acres. If in the CF zone, it also can't be more than 6 acres, and it can't be located in an area of their general plan that they've designated as a transit-oriented development zone. I think I must have the same slide twice. This is, I think this is from Farmington's code. I didn't label that. But they get into their general standards that they're going to apply to all of them. And we have that in our ordinance as well. And then they get into, excuse me, I didn't keep this slide. Oh no, this was for Class A auto sales. So if you look at the difference between this code in South Jordan, they've given one sentence to the standards for medical dental office, right? Over here, auto sales takes on a whole bunch more standards, right? They talk about what the building should look like. They talk about what the fencing should be. They talk about the landscaping. They talk about the lighting and the outdoor lighting specific. They talk about the signs. They talk about the noise, you know, amplified speakers in the parking lot, talking to their salespeople. I mean, I can see that, how that can be problems. How they maintain the property. So they've gone into much more detail into their individual uses in Farmington than they did in South Jordan for the majority of their uses. So they don't even have auto sales here with additional standards. But those are ones that we want to think about. What conditional uses have we had come before us before, and what things we think should be regulated a little bit more? What standards would we like to put in place? If we're okay with car dealerships on Highway 89 in the CH zone, what do we want car dealerships to be? Do we want it to have a minimum size? Because the tiny ones are problems for us. Do we want to say, you know, okay, you have to have this much or maximum number of display vehicles, and we come up with some sort of a formula based upon lot size, right? And then it's something that's it's not subjective anymore. So it's not my code enforcement going out and saying, well, clearly you have too many cars on the lot. Well, because I can count them, and you're only supposed to have 80 cars. When you have an acre, you're only supposed to have 80 cars, maybe. I don't know if that's the right number or not. But he can count it and say, you have 105 cars, and you're only supposed to have 80 cars. You only have room for 80 cars. So those are the kind of standards that we need to put in, and we have to define it for all of these uses. So the more uses we have, the more we have to define the standards for. So wherever we can collapse uses, I'm going to be in favor of that, because I can link, I don't have to do a separate standard for every single manufacturing use or every single type of retail store. I don't want to have different standards for a clothing retail store than I would have for a jewelry store, let's say. And I'm really not crying. My eyes are just watering.
Can I add something? So right now in our commercial highway zone, we have a lot more vague type uses, like she was just saying. And it's been functioning really well. It's very different because we don't have those heavy industrial manufacturing things that we really should identify and prohibit where necessary. But what I have had success with in our CH zone is someone will come in, say a car dealer, and they want to go in on a tiny lot. Well, car dealers are permitted in that zone, so permitted by right, the land use can go in, but they don't have enough parking, and our parking requirement is what is going to make it so I can say, hey, you don't meet my parking code, or hey, you don't meet the outdoor storage code. And sure, they could come in and potentially modify the site to make it work, but we have other code sections that can kind of be a catch-all for some of the potential issues that could come from collapsing some of those sections, if that makes sense.
And so we will be adding uses into this table related to social services and the conditions that we would put on that type of use should we get a conditional use permit in the future for that shelter. Now, I don't know if we will or not. I don't know if they'll get their funding again, but that's something that we're going to deal with. But in the meantime, so we have a couple of conditional use permits that were in process before the council met and directed us. We have to process those, but we can't process any other new conditional use permit applications until this ordinance is adopted or until February 15th at the latest.
So, Sherry, I clearly heard your preference for collapsing some of these retail in particular, but as we look through there, I don't know how many different categories there are, but what's your sense? Do you think that it's a minority of these that should be collapsed, or is it a lot of them? I'm just trying to get a sense of what your opinion was.
I think a lot of them can be collapsed, but I think as part of that process of collapsing them, we have to identify the ones that we want to specifically prohibit. So we have to be very careful in picking those things that we absolutely don't want. So I do not want somebody to come in and open up an animal rendering plant. I do not want somebody coming in and doing some sort of manufacturing that uses dangerous chemicals that potentially could get into our storm drain or cause an explosion. I have a business right now that was reported for a code violation for some odors, and some of the chemicals that we've discovered they're using are very, very dangerous. And not a great, they're very explosive. It's not good. So we're working through that issue.
To be fair, they've been operating without a business
license. Yeah, they've been operating without a business license that we didn't know. We had no idea they were even there. But those are the types of things that we have to be very careful and think about, the things that we don't want to have in our city. And so that's why this exercise, we were hoping that we could assign that and have you go through there and really just highlight things that you think should be prohibited, and also highlight things maybe with a different color. We only had yellow ones, so we can't give you a yellow and a pink, but we can bring you other highlighters if you need, if you don't have them. But circle the ones that are questionable. Hey, why do we have this? Or we probably could have this, but we need some standards for it. And then we can focus in on those ones and get them lined out of this, because it's easier to take the things out that we want to prohibit.
Sherry, we talk about there's some gaps, even with this extensive of a list, but is there any cities, municipalities that have exhaustive lists that we ought to be looking at to see if there's any gaps? Has anybody really gone to the nth degree on it?
If I could find them, I would like to know. I've been looking, and it's all over the board. Honestly, I feel like we're probably, once again, going to be the community that writes a really good ordinance, and then Utah League of Cities and Towns is going to share it with all the other cities and say, hey, this is what you need to do. I mean, that's what happened with our ADU ordinance. And that's just, we wrote a good ordinance, and now the other cities use it as a model for their ordinances. Is it perfect for every city? No, they have to tweak it for theirs. But I can't find, it's all over the place. Like, some of them have addressed some things, some of them have addressed other things, some of them haven't done anything. Some of the codes are still just like ours that have these exhaustive lists of uses that there's no way they've gone through and done that. Well, and they haven't. It's a monumental task. It really is. If it wasn't, it would be done already.
How often does something come in that's not on this list, like just ballpark? Is it next to never? Is it regularly?
Well, things that are not explicitly on the list, so there are just so many unusual businesses that come in and we're like, we have to call them. Based on what they put on their license, we have to call them and say, okay, we need more clarification. We don't quite understand what it is you do.
Sometimes I make them classify themselves. I would say 30%.
Oh, yeah, probably about 30%. It is. Because they come in and it's just, they're so specific in what they do, and we don't have that specific use. We had one that came in that they manufacture and test. Well, they don't manufacture, they assemble and test the NICU incubators. Like,
put it on the list.
Honestly, but you're not manufacturing them, you're just design and testing them, you're doing some assembly of other parts that you ordered. It was very difficult to figure out which category to fit them into.
That's where the vagueness would have been incredibly helpful. But we are on a delicate, don't go too vague.
So we're looking for a balance between like umbrellaing a lot of these things, but then making very specific things that we know have been problematic in the past or need to have tight regulation for code enforcement.
Yes, and so we'll help you with that. We will be doing the same exercise in-house with the staff and trying to come up with how the categories that we think should be prohibited and the categories that we think we need standards. But we just need another seven more sets of eyes to look at these, and so we don't miss anything and go, okay, well, why do we have this use? What does this use mean? And is that really something we want in the city? I mean, I could just go down here on the list and say racetracks. Racetracks are conditional in the MD and MG zones. Why do we have that? Do we want to have a racetrack in the industrial park? I don't know.
Is there a price for
maybe we do because you know, Commissioner Larson's son races go-karts, right? But maybe that type of racetrack is okay, but a horse racetrack wouldn't be, right? Like, so this might be one that we need more defining on what a racetrack is, or is that classified as an amusement like the go-karts, right? So I learned that last week from your sister.
Is there a reason why the CH zone isn't on the table?
So we pulled the CH zone out of this table several years ago when we were working on the town center and the form-based code as a stopgap measure, because we had all of these lists, including like gas stations and car washes and some things that we might not have wanted on Highway 89. And so we wanted to limit the number of uses and reduce them, so we pulled the CH zone out specifically.
Will that still be the case, even though we're not doing the form-based code?
We are using that chapter as a holding zone because we are going to do a town center code. And we are working on that. We're putting out an RFP for design standards that are going to be written into code. Allie and Caden are working on that currently.
Okay. Understood.
Yep.
So I was seeing in some of these examples you've been showing us, like specifically for that check cashing one, there was like, there cannot be more than one of these establishments like on the same block or something like that. So is there I know this is like a few steps away, but like, I'm specifically thinking about like auto, like car dealerships and stuff. Like, is that something potentially we could put into the language here where it's like, we can't have more than this amount in this area, or like, you know what I mean, in this distance or whatever? Or is that like too limiting? Is that too?
So I see that a lot in other people's codes, in other cities' codes.
Is that too?
I've often questioned whether or not that would be, whether it's too legal.
Yeah.
I guess is a good way to say it, or fair, because it's sort of like somebody. I've used it the same analogy as that somebody came in and said, we're going to allow restaurants in this zone, but we only want locally owned restaurants. We don't want franchises. And I can't tell somebody legally, well, Bill's Cafe can come in here, but Chili's can't. That would be discrimination based upon, if it's a restaurant, it's a restaurant, and I should allow it. And so certain uses definitely, they can, I've seen separation distances like sexually oriented businesses. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to have two strip clubs that are closer than X number of feet together. You might not want to have two bars close together. I don't know if those have been challenged, those location requirements. I've seen them in codes, and it's talk to the city attorney about and say, hey, is that something we can do to say, We only want to have X number of car dealerships, or car dealerships need to be half mile apart.
Well, yeah, or, right. You know, I mean, we see, if we're determining, like, what we want it to look like and how big it can be and how many, it kind of feels like we can also be like, well, there can only be one on this block. You know what I mean? I don't know. It doesn't seem that far away from kind of what we're saying, but I get what you're saying also.
Yeah, we'll definitely investigate that. I would take notes of that, and when I meet with the city attorney, that's one of the questions I'll ask, because I'm going to have a meeting with him to discuss all of these things, what changes he's recommending for our conditional use permits, what changes he's recommending for signs, and two other topics
and
that
then when
I've been
this
trying
does,
to get a meeting with him
can
for.
You explain like how this does get changed like, what is the process? And is there like a public hearing for when it changes or?
Yes, so we are gonna work over the next couple of months to draft up the changes, and then you will hold a public hearing and make a recommendation on those changes to the city council, and then the city council will vote to either adopt those changes or modify those changes and adopt them or potentially reject those changes. But usually they adopt what you guys recommend. They may tweak some things sometimes, but they usually adopt what you recommend.
Okay, thanks.
Any questions on that or thoughts?
When are we going to be readdressing this together?
So
when's the due date of the homework?
Yeah. I would like to do some work on it every time that we meet.
Okay.
So I'm not saying you have to get through this entire table, because it's really just going to depend on how many other agenda items we have. And like I said, we do have some site plans and some conditional use permits that are waiting in the wings that we're just waiting for those applicants to finish up their required red lines to get back to you. One of them is the project at 130 East. He promises me that it will be in the next week or two that I'll have those red line corrections. I mean, he's had them since June 2nd. So I don't know what the delay is with his engineer getting those corrections made, but there, he's had my corrections since June 10th. Probably had Karen's, the engineering department's was definitely in July when I got those over to him, and now we're almost out of August, right? So he's definitely had them for almost 2 months for the complete set. He's had mine since June, but he's had hers since July, so.
And we have a few more minor code amendments that will be coming across. Bay doors fronting a street is something that the city manager feels very strongly against. So we will be fixing that code just in an effort to beautify the industrial park, as we've been trying to do, right? Short-term rentals, there's a handful of them that we're working on simultaneously.
We know an applicant is working on a code amendment they're going to request for caretaker dwellings for commercial businesses, which is something that we have thought would be a good idea. So this is particularly in relationship to a church. They want to convert a building into a church, and then they want to have a living quarters for the pastor on the property.
How do we currently handle like storage units that are commonly that way?
We turn our head away.
right now our code says it's not permitted. So there's at least one that I know of that I'm like, I think they have a unit in there, and I'm not really sure how it got permitted.
It could be legal nonconforming. So
it might be legal nonconforming,
but
it might be that somebody didn't pay attention to it, but it exists. But that's something that we've had other people ask for on other types of business, so storage units.
I have a couple of spots in the industrial park that is one parcel or a couple that are owned by a single landlord, and they have hired and put someone who lives on the premise as security. And again, I don't know about that, but I do. On and off the record, this is going to clear that up. But we've had a lot of pre-application meetings also site plan-wise for potential fast food establishments. There's some conversation about commercial for the Clifton North portion of the development on 1100 and Redwood. And then there is potential talk about some residential going in on Redwood that would be a senior living, and that's down on the more southern side. So we've had a lot of things in the fire, but none of them have been ready for you guys.
I mean, speaking of fire, we have a particular plumber in the industrial area that had a fire on their property that was in the mobile home that they were using as a caretaker dwelling for their security that we didn't know was even there. Nobody even knew it was there until the mobile home started on fire. And that was several years ago. Then we were like, you can't have this in here. It's not permitted. This has never been permitted. And they had to clear all that out. And I'm hoping they haven't ever moved a different mobile home in, but I don't know that for sure because it's hidden back in. I mean, I can't see the property from the street. So I don't know that they have done that again, but we had to tell them they couldn't do it. You know, we're like, here, we got this call, the fire department got a call on a mobile home that was on fire in the industrial park behind this building, and nobody even knew it was there. Nobody knew it was hooked up to sewer and water.
All right, so moving forward, if we are going to like take bites of this at different meetings, is there a way that makes logical sense for the staff for us to move through it so that we all are on the same page with what will be discussed at each meeting?
Yes, I think it would be great if we could get through.
So do we want to like, we'll try and get through a like page maybe, 1 through 3, or do how maybe, makes maybe, sense to do that so that we can all?
Maybe through the non-store retailers, which is at the top of page 5. Okay. And that's why I say, because the bottom of that one is miscellaneous store retailers. So if we could get down to through those store retailers, non-store and store retailers, and then we'll start on air transportation from there down at the following meeting.
Great. So if you could add that to the agenda or even just to the email that has the packet attached to it,
absolutely,
just as a reminder that this is what we're going to be working through. And then also if it's an agenda heavy meeting, we can move it to the next meeting, but that gets us all clearly on how exactly we're going to consume this.
Because getting the uses that we think we want prohibited is going to save me a lot of time. I don't want to develop a standard for uses that we're going to prohibit. I don't want to waste my time in drafting that if we're just going to cut it out, because I think those are the things that we should have a conversation about. Like, we might want to say, I don't know, I'm just trying to figure out something here. Nuclear electric power generation, that's not permitted right now. We're not going to permit it. That's probably one that we're not going to want. You're going to highlight that one. Yeah, that should stay prohibited, right? And I'm not going to have to write a standard for that use.
All right, so we are looking at, for the next meeting, getting through pages 1 to 5, specific task item is highlighting prohibited uses and highlighting ones that are confusing and that we don't understand or seem confusing to an applicant, and then any places that we can collapse.
Yeah, ones
or
you think that
might need to
are
expand.
Similar enough, then maybe mark that with something out to the side that says, can these be collapsed or something?
Awesome. Does
and
anyone
then we'll
on
just
the,
discuss them.
Does anyone on the commission have any questions about the task at hand?
I forgot what S stands for.
S is staff determination, which means that when they come in and ask and when they're in that category, then we look at what they're proposing and is it most similar to a permitted use or a conditional use in that zone, and then we decide if it's permitted or we decide if it's conditional. The default on those, probably 80% of the time at least, is that it's going to be conditional, because if they're really something oddball, we would rather defer that to this body in case there is people who want to make comment on those particular uses, or if we think that the reason that they don't fit is because they may have an impact that needs to be mitigated. And that's something the Planning Commission under our current ordinance can do, is mitigate those, and we have the general standards and the general conditions that you can put on, but we need to get a little more specific than just those general conditions under the conditional use ordinance. So that's how we usually default those. So unless we can find something that's really similar. And then as far as the signs go, I already mentioned this in earlier, but we're going to be looking at time, place, and manner. And I'll be working with the city attorney to draft up the sign ordinance. So there's not really much you need to do. I just wanted to make you aware of that and also let you know about that work session in case you're interested. And if you want, after the meeting the next day, we can send you the link to the YouTube video, to the YouTube. So if you want to watch it and give you a little summary of whether or not we think it's valuable for you to watch too.
That would be excellent if you will just plan on sending that to us.
Yep.
Thank you.
I think that would be very helpful to you. And then I wanted to give you a general plan update. So we had scheduled a steering committee meeting, and I believe we have a couple of you. Is it Ryan and Brandon? Yeah, that are on our steering committee. We scheduled that with our consultants for September 4th, and then found out that's the same day during the Utah League of Cities and Towns Conference. So we're working with them to get that rescheduled. It'll probably be moved out a week or two, but the steering committee will be going over the things that we're going to do at the workshop, which has been scheduled for October 7th at 6 p.m. We'll be reviewing at that general plan workshop the existing condition summary, which is now done, and we're reviewing that. The consultant has written and gone through everything through the city of what are their existing conditions in the city, so we're reviewing that. We'll be doing visual preference surveys and the development of the scenarios, and this will be a more hands-on meeting for the people in the community, for our residents to come in and participate and draw on maps and really get down and dirty like you've done in some of your other workshops that you've attended for Wasatch Front Regional Council, for example. So I just wanted to make you aware that that's in process. And that is all I have for the work session part.
Thank you. And then item number four, City Council action items.
Okay, so I've just put on this slide the last meetings that the council have had since your last Planning Commission meeting that have agenda items that would affect you. First was obviously that John was appointed to the Planning Commission, and we're really happy to have him on the Planning Commission. Incidentally, my second choice for Planning Commission was just appointed to the Parks and Arts Board, so I'm super excited to have her on board there. John just nudged her out just a little bit, but she's terrific. She really is terrific too. So
who is it?
Her name is Emily Carr, and she's a young lady who lives on Highway 89. She's a renter over there by Ponds Plumbing in the apartments that are right near that, and she runs a Instagram page that you might be interested in. It's called Not a Through City, where she highlights really cool things in North Salt Lake. Just a couple days ago, she went over to Mrs. Kavanaugh's, the chocolate factory, and she did a whole big write-up about the chocolate factory and how you can take a tour and how you schedule that and everything you get. And she's just really excited and energized and young and has that energy that she's really excited about North Salt Lake. And especially for a renter and a young person, it's so fantastic to see. So I encourage you to follow her if you're on Instagram, because she's really fun. She posts fun things all the time.
Sounds like I need to start a new Instagram as well. Match your energy.
Going to have to up your game. the council also approved matching funding for the city to apply for Davis County Mural Grant. The Arts and Parks Committee is working on that. We probably won't be able to get an application in this year just because it's been very difficult to find a property owner. And plus, in my opinion, I think we're kind of putting the cart in front of the horse. I think we need to come up with, the Arts and Parks Committee needs to come up with a program. So there are things that they need to decide, like what is the theme? What is the part of the city that we want to have murals in? What's the criteria for picking a muralist? What's the criteria for, you know, what's our budget going to be? How many are we going to try to do? Like other cities, South Salt Lake, we talked to them, like when they started their mural program, they have a goal to do 100 mural or 10 murals a year until they get to 100 murals. And so it's very ambitious. But they're doing really well in that. And so those are some of the things that they need to come up with as a plan, so that we have more time to find an artist, have them draw up what they want to the mural to be, have that go through the Parks Committee, then have it go to City Council for approval. Because no matter what, if there's going to be a public mural in the city, City Council wants to know what it's going to look like. We want to know what the topic is going to be. And we want it to relate to something in our city. Maybe it's part of the One Kind Act a Day thing. Maybe it's something that relates to North Salt Lake's history or heritage. But there's certain requirements for the grant program with Davis County that have to appeal to tourism. You have to want tourists to come, or people from out of the area to come and take pictures of them, right? That's kind of the goal, is to have these Davis County murals for tourism. So that's why they do those grants.
I saw the 10,000 by John's name. I thought he's a much better negotiator than.
Oh. Yeah, that was not for him.
Separate action items.
Separate action. I already told you about the special meeting they had on August 15th. That just kind of gives you the outline of what it was. And then at August 20th, the regular meeting, the city council went on a tour of Switchpoint in Tooele. And it really is a really great program that they have. I don't think this is the best location for it. In North Salt Lake, I'm really worried about transient camps along the Jordan River, as well as, you know, in our industrial zone and our town center and parks. So, but they did go to see what their program was, and they are really good operators, and there are good people that are being helped by it. So I did want to just say that, but I honestly don't think this is the best location for it. I think it should be more centrally located in the county. It's just too close to Salt Lake, and ours would just be, that would be a lot of overflow from Salt Lake. And I just don't think that helps the right people for the county. So that's where that stands. And that's all I have on the action updates.
Thank you. Approval of the minutes from June 11th. Are there any amendments or adjustments to the minutes? I think that was our shortest meeting on record. I think it says it was like 6 minutes long. That's pretty good. Yeah.
So I'll offer a motion. Commissioner Jorgensen, offer a motion to approve the Planning Commission meeting minutes as drafted for the June 11, 2024 meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner Jorgensen. Do we have a second?
I'll second. Commissioner Tucker.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. And we are adjourned.
Perfect timing.